Good afternoon. We got Side Pocket on with another guest. Who do we have today, Side Pocket?
Well, like I said, we are doing many, many panel interviews, and right now we have someone who presented in... I can't pronounce his name. I'll just call it Scorpio, and you guys can yell at me at IRC. He did a talk called Hacking the Patent System, the Vulnerabilities That Allow for Bad Patents and How to Stop Them by Charles Duan. Welcome here at Radio Satellite, Charles Duan. Thank you.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Awesome. So for the lowly peons who are unfortunately not here at Hope, can you summarize like what your talk was basically about?
Yeah, so basically, just a little background about myself. I work at a nonprofit organization where we do technology advocacy. Mm-hmm. And the talk I gave was on basically the ways that people get some of the bad patents that we've seen out there. You know, I'm sure that you've heard of all of these patents, like, you know, Amazon's patent on white background photography.
Right.
Or these patents on, like, scanning to email. Mm-hmm. There are tons of them out there. And, you know, I think a lot of people wonder, you know, where do they come from? Mm-hmm. And it turns out that I went through them and said, you know, what happens is you write your patent in this very clever way, mm-hmm. right? You throw in a lot of like complex words and, mm-hmm. you know, you throw in all of these like explanations of what a computer does, you know, just very generic things, but they make it look impressive. And, you know, a lot of times that, you know, gets you over the hurdles and ends up getting you patents that, you know, ordinarily most people wouldn't expect you ought to be getting.
So the definition of bad that you're going through is not bad in that it's trying to poorly define something and we have legal problems. The bad is that we have these companies who are technically trying to get away with illegal things by kind of just overloading the patent with nonsense so that the average person wouldn't understand what was going on.
Well, the thing is that, you know, the reason that they do this is because the law kind of says this is the way to do it.
Yeah, we're too vague.
Yeah, the law basically says, like, look, if you spend a lot of time talking about computer hardware, then suddenly you can get patents on, like, simple mm-hmm. software. Or, you know, if you give a really detailed algorithm, if you put a lot of details into, like, a really simple algorithm, mm-hmm. then suddenly, the patent looks like it's really complicated, and so, you know, it'll overcome some of the like non-obviousness hurdles that you know you would otherwise expect to keep something like this
right.
patented.
Right, and again, it reminds us of how behind the United States government is in general with our technology, with our you know progressions in technology. I mean, recently myself, I had something where I had to go through law enforcement, and it's amazing of how thoroughly defined they have something as theft as a physical object, but once it reaches digital, even when it's stuff that's on hardware. That's on the hardware itself that's lost. It just seems like what you would think that a lot of the physical stuff with some variations would transfer to United States law when it comes to digital stuff, but they don't know. It's like a fairy tale. You might as well be talking about dragons and hobbits at that point.
Yeah, the problem is that when it comes to new technologies, you know, there's always that learning curve, mm-hmm. and you know, it takes a lot of time for examiners for patent examiners to understand these things. In the same way that it takes a lot of time for border enforcement people to understand these sorts of things.
Well, it's all well and good when someone, and thank you for that, for letting people know that there is a problem. But one of the things that sometimes happens with activism and hackers is that people point out a vulnerability in a system, whether it's a hardware system or a social system, and then it just sits there as a vulnerability for 5 years until someone decides to do something about it when it's too late, whether it's official or as a hobby. Did you detail anything in your talk about possible ways that us lowly peons at home looking at the government could combat this BS?
Yeah, there are, I think the thing is that there are a lot of opportunities to participate. You know, one of the good things that has happened in the last few years is that the Patent Office has really started trying to get more outside input.
Mm.
So, you know, they're holding, actually this Tuesday, they're holding a roundtable meeting to talk about software patents. They're currently taking comments on how to advise examiners on determining what software patents are to be allowed and not. So, you know, there are a lot of opportunities to try to participate in the process and tell the patent office, you know, these are ways that you can help to, you know, try to avoid these sorts of problems you've been seeing down the road.
So with the patent office and the type of committee, I'm just in my head when I think of the patent office, I think of that scene from the movie Thunderball where all the James Bond villains together, it's this like closed circuit internal talking thing. Now when you say taking notes, is that something, can you email them, can you write physical letters, do you comment somewhere on the FCC, like how would someone go about doing that?
It's very similar to the FCC net neutrality proceeding where you send an email
sweet.
To a place. If you look on the USPTO's website for guideline, I think it's called Guidelines on Alice versus CLS Bank. Mm-hmm. Alice versus CLS Bank was the case that the Supreme Court decided, and the guidance is telling examiners how to use that case.
Mm-hmm.
That will give you the place where they are taking comments. That, there are a lot of other opportunities, and plus, probably in the coming months, Congress is going to take up again the patent reform bill that they were looking at before.
That's going to be
another big place where, you know, public input is going to be really important. Telling members of Congress that, you know, we really think that this is affecting us.
I think I called you by the wrong name. I should have called you Paul Revere, because what we need is like someone you're coming together and gets that we need to come out in droves and send messages.
The patent trolls are coming.
Yes, the patent trolls, sunlight, and, you know, the anonymous mass to come out so that we can do something about it. Not necessarily because something bad is going to happen, but to prevent future problems from happening before they actually happen.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
And you know, I think the important thing is, you know, a lot of people get kind of fixated on like software patents. They just say, oh, software patents are the problem, we just got rid of software patents, you know, everything's fine. Think about it, right? In 5 years, right, we're gonna have 3D printers everywhere. Mm-hmm. Everybody's gonna be doing 3D printing. Guess what? Every time you 3D print an object, maybe you're violating a patent.
Right.
You know, that's, you know, and all of this, you can do all the work you want on software pads. That's
With 3D printing, how complicated it is alone, and the fact that now, like, instead of just printing simple geometric shapes, you can actually print something that's all its individual pieces together working. Like, you can print a wrench and it works.
Exactly.
Like, all the individual piece stuff. It comes to the question of, like, you know, what, by definition, U.S. law, like, what is a classification of an object, or who owns that object, if you can just kind of like Neal Stephenson's The Diamond Age, where it's like when you can just pull materials from the sky and create stuff. So just two more quick questions. So this was, from what I understand, your first talk at Hope.
It was.
What was the experience of giving your panel at Hope? Like,
it was really great. I was not expecting as many people as did show up to show up. They turned the lights down, right? So I can't see all the people. And then they turned the lights down, I'm like, wow, this room is full.
You should just be really happy no one was naked when they turned the lights on, because we've had years like that. I've been to a couple of those, Johannes. I'm glad you had this awesome experience. I hope you keep coming back stuff. And so I guess my two last questions are, one, I'm assuming you had a Q&A at your panel.
Uh-huh.
What was the most interesting question did someone ask you, and what was your answer to that?
I think that there were a lot of interesting questions, but, you know, there were a number of people who asked, you know, what do we do about this?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm glad that people are asking that, because, you know, I don't want people to just go around, you know, go out of this talk saying, you know, patents are terrible. I want people to go out saying, you know, we can do something to fix this.
I'll give you everyone a hint to anyone who wants to submit a talk to Hope. No matter what you talk about, whether it's about SSH tunneling or patents or sex or beer or whatever, the main thing you want to do is, we're the type of audience that wants to learn, make the audience think. And I think you came with a problem that is that people are going to be thinking about for the longest time. So I guess my last question is now that you've done your talk, you have a badge that lasts all 3 days. What are you looking forward to for the rest of the con? Have you seen any other cool things?
I'm definitely going to be going to a lot of other talks, and I'm going to be spending a lot of time picking locks.
Yes. Deviant has a lot of his hands. And quick question, as it just enters my mind right now, I promise the switchboard guy is the last one, because right now he's aiming the gun at me. You're trying to do this rallying call, which I think is a great thing of trying to prevent a problem to happen before it happens, which that happens rarely. I mean, Nick tried to warn of certain things that now we're just making laws for. Never mind what you personally think about Mitnick, these are actual problems that come up. My question is that in a best case scenario, what would you like to see about patent submission and loopholes, besides them obviously getting plugged, that you would like to see change with the patent office in the future? Like, what's your good future scenario?
I mean, I think the most important thing, and, you know, this is a really, really long-term goal, it's just kind of the cultural change that, you know, I think a lot of the people who are within the patent system think that the patent system is the whole world, right? That, you know, all inventions come out of patents, and that's, you know, if everything that we do to strengthen patents makes more inventions, right? And I think that, you know, just getting more people in there saying, look, you know, we do all of this cool stuff. We do open source software, and we do startups, and, you know, we don't need patents to do that sort of stuff, because we've got our own incentives.
Yeah.
You know, just getting that message there, I think, will really, you know, tell them that, you know, what we don't want is the strongest system in the world. What we want is a balanced system.
Mm. Right. And just in my head, you know, you're talking about the U.S. patent systems. Is there anything from, like, have you seen any differences in, like, other foreign nations with their, do you have any knowledge of their systems that you would like to see be incorporated over here?
Yeah, I think that Europe is often cited as an example of having better standards in terms of software.
Mm-hmm.
There are other countries that, you know, have other aspects about. I think New Zealand has the sort of compulsory licensing system that says if you don't practice your patent within a certain amount of time, then, you know, you might have to start offering it to other people so they can use it.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of good ideas out there.
Right.
You know, it's always going to depend on exactly what particular business in the United States need, but, you know, I think we definitely should be looking at lots of ideas.
Right. Well, it makes sense because, like, for example, like, a lot of people think I'm 100% anti-capitalist. I like Nintendo and stuff. I like, you know, I think the brand name should exist. My thing is, like, you know, how scary would it be if to find out, like, all of a sudden, like, Google retroactively patents Fire or, you know, things that are, like, really base things of human needs. Like, no one has that. That technically, if you think about it, Fire is the first open source invention, you know? And I think we're in an age where we're starting to realize that the necessity outweighs the end goal of greed. Not to say you can't make money off of it, but we really need to think, you know, it reminds me of what they say in Jurassic Park. Scientists were so obsessed that they possibly could do it, they never thought if they should. We need to think of how we apply our stuff, never mind, you know, whether it's needed or not.
Yeah. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, we see a lot of people who are, you know, classic examples of that, of, you know, I will build, like, this really awesome operating system for nothing.
Yes.
Like, just because I think it's cool and because I want people to know
we
what
had
I can
someone
do.
Like that earlier as our first talk, Jack, who made the awesome Ninja OS system. Yep. Cool. And one last quick thing I want to plug in here is one of my favorite books. A lot of what you're talking about sounds like something in a book that Cory Doctorow wrote, which I believe was called Makers or Builders or something like that. I had an autograph near Comic Con, which was about the collapse of patent culture, where everything becomes open source from a combination of the rampant open sourceness, but it was compounded with how cheap materials are, that the big and middle-sized companies couldn't really hold on to anything, so they had to redefine what a market was because the market was so rigid it collapsed when those two support systems fell.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, in like the real world, it's really interesting to watch companies, you know, discover the open source model and realize, hey, you know, we can actually make real businesses out of this.
Right. Like,
I mean, yeah, there's nothing. It's not like you have to have patents and all of these rights in order to be successful. There are lots of ways to do it.
Right. And once again, I said thank you for coming on the radio. Thank you for having your talk here. I hope you come in the future. We're going to have one more interview shortly, but I have to go run and get it. But stay tuned for more awesome listeners on Radio Statler.